stand, please. Oh, yay, oh, yay, oh, yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Page number 10, that's 376. That is the veteran, annual as state or assigned.
Good morning, Chief Judge Santel, and may it please the court.
Morning, counsel.
The government has the burden of proof at sentencing. If it wants to impose an enhancement under the guidelines, it has to prove each and every element of that enhancement. This requires real evidence presented to the district court, not after-the-fact speculation offered belatedly on appeal. The government failed to satisfy its burden here. It provided insufficient evidence that Ms. Baker used an authentication feature, as that term is defined in 1028 D1, and no evidence that the Rockwell's vulnerabilities were unusual among typical victims of the crime. Respectfully, Your Honors, we ask this court to reverse. Let me begin with the authentication feature.
You really don't think the evidence that the victims were a couple in their late 80s and 90s and she had dementia renders them fairly vulnerable?
Your Honor,
what persons would you think would be vulnerable victims?
Well, Your Honor, we would say that it's certainly the case that they were vulnerable in an absolute sense or in an inherent sense. Mm-hmm. But the test that the government put forward to the Supreme Court, which we agree is the correct test in the Morrill case, is the one that applies here, and that test requires a comparison of the particular
bank fraud she was convicted of.
Yes, Your Honor. Mm,
they're more vulnerable than banks, aren't they?
I'm sorry?
They're more vulnerable than banks, aren't they?
Well, Your Honor, the court...
And more vulnerable than most people. Do you really think they needed any more evidence than that?
Your Honor, I agree with you that the victims in this case are most likely...
I'll let you alone, then. Unless my colleagues have questions, you can move on to the other issue.
I would like to hear the answer to Judge Chantel's question. Who is more vulnerable than a person with dementia?
Your Honor, I think even if the only victims of this crime were people with dementia, then the enhancement wouldn't apply.
And so, do you think the only victims? You don't think the judge could? It would be unreasonable for the judge to assume that every victim of bank fraud does not have dementia.
Well, again, Your Honor, I'm not saying that every victim would have to have dementia in order for the enhancement not to apply. But if a significant number of them did,
so you think the rule just so we can take a thought about whether the rule you're presenting is correct. Do you think that in order for the government to succeed, it would have to know exactly how many victims of bank fraud have dementia?
I wouldn't need to know exactly how many, Your Honor, but it would need to have some reasonable basis for comparing these.
And how would it know that?
Well, the courts that have applied this standard have looked to a variety of sources. For example, they've looked at studies, scholarly studies. They could introduce testimony. The district court, in particular cases, may have heard a lot of bank fraud cases and may have a sufficient wealth of experience to draw on in making that determination.
The Third Circuit in Zatz, the Second Circuit in McCall both take the opposite position, right?
Your Honor, I think the First Circuit in Sabatino took my position, which is essentially the position that the government has taken in a wide number of cases.
And in Feldman?
I think, Your Honor, that they've never renounced the rule that they put forward in Sabatino.
So they have sort of a mixed rule.
It's not
some panels going one way, some another.
I think when they refer to the rule and in a formal sense, that's I believe Sabatino is the governing precedent. But you're right, Your Honor. In some cases, it's hard to tell whether the courts are implying the rules consistently. I will agree with that. And in fact, in the Second Circuit, the McCall case that's cited. There's a case that comes after that, I believe, that we've cited, that where they apply the government standard.
The rule in this circuit is it's the first case, not the second case, that counts. Because otherwise a second panel could overrule the first without en banc.
Right. But, Your Honor, I believe, I don't think the government would contest the fact that in the First Circuit, the Sabatino.
The whole thing just makes me wonder how ignorant you think judges have to be. Do you really think that the guideline for especially vulnerable victims applied to bank fraud contemplates there has to be a study to find out that people with dementia are more vulnerable than banks?
Your Honor, I don't think the appropriate comparison is necessarily just to banks, because I think the courts have recognized.
Why isn't that enough comparison?
Because
you obviously cannot know the whole universe of victims. So even if your standard is correct, why isn't there plenty out there for judges to simply notice? We don't have to be ignorant of the entire world in order to sit as judges.
I completely agree with that, Your Honor. Yeah. I think if clearly the district court did not take judicial notice of this fact, and we would argue that it couldn't have taken judicial notice because these facts are not commonly known. The typical
it's not commonly known that people with dementia are more vulnerable than people that don't have dementia.
I think that's commonly known, but that's not the question here, Your Honor. Let me try
a hypothetical. It may be precisely the question here, counsel.
Let me try a hypothetical on you, Your Honor. If Michael Jordan were to walk into this courtroom right now, and we were to ask the question, is Michael Jordan really tall? Is he unusually tall relative to the average person? Everyone would agree. It would be obvious that Michael Jordan is unusually tall. But if the question in the case were, is Michael Jordan unusually tall relative to the typical NBA player, that'd be a much harder question. We'd have to look at evidence.
Yeah. If we ever have that question, you can come argue it, counsel. That's not the question we've got.
Can I ask you, where's the best place you can point me in the sentencing hearing that counsel for the defendant made this argument?
Your Honor, the counsel for the defendant did not make this specific argument except generally to say that there was insufficient evidence.
Well, that's not exactly what he even said. What he said was, in the sentencing hearing, is that you have to show that these particular people, right? That was the problem. There's I'm looking at page JA-122. There is little, if any, discussion regarding these particular victims. In this case, there's no evidence indicating that what the person's mental condition was. We also believe that there needs to be some evidence that indicates the victim's vulnerability. If the court finds that the victim was vulnerable, that their vulnerability somehow facilitated the crime. There's no evidence regarding the type of information that Ms. Baker had. So when you say that the court didn't make a determination about comparative vulnerabilities, that's because no one asked the court to make that, isn't that right?
Well, Your Honor, a couple things. One, you're absolutely right about what was said. It was also said at the outset of that discussion. His counsel said that the general claim was that the government had not presented sufficient evidence under this enhancement.
Right, but he described what he thought sufficient evidence required.
I think he was giving examples of evidence that was not in the record.
Well, is there any? He says, that's all I have. I have nothing further with respect to the guideline. He specified particularly what it was that was insufficient, and that's all he said. So why do we not have plain error with respect to the claim you're raising here?
Your Honor, I think you could read the transcript fairly in either direction.
Well, show me where you could read it fairly in your direction. I'm not really seeing that. That's why I asked you, where's your best site?
My best site, Your Honor, would be on page 122, where counsel said that the general position was that the government had not presented sufficient evidence. But, Your Honor, even if plain error review were – well, let me step back and say the government's interpretation of what happened at the sentencing hearing, and we're prepared to accept that interpretation, and this is put forth on page 39 of the government's brief, is that the district court did, in fact – make a finding with regard under the test that both the government and we agree is the right one, under the moral test. And so the government's position...
We don't have to take either your position or the government's position. All we have to do is read the transcript that's right in front of us.
That's fair enough, Your Honor. Let me just come back to one point that Judge Sentelle asked originally about who would be vulnerable. I think if you look at...
You come up with somebody.
Well, I think it's striking to me when looking at the cases that have applied this standard, Your Honor, the types of victims that have been found not to be vulnerable. In the Sabatino case, for example, you had an 18-year-old mother. She was unmarried. She didn't have a job. She was vulnerable. The court said that she was her situation was marked by innocence, that she had experienced a hard life, that she was vulnerable, and yet it didn't find the enhancement because it held that this standard applies. Your Honor,
what was the crime in that case?
It was a Mann Act violation, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't have a lot to do with this case, really.
I'm sorry?
Doesn't really have a lot to do with this case.
No, but I think...
You still haven't given me the person who's more vulnerable. You gave me a lead-in that made me had me all ears as to this person you thought of that was more of a victim, you thought was more vulnerable than a person with dementia. But still haven't heard that, counsel.
I think the person who would be more vulnerable would be a person who was unable to detect the crime at all. And in this case, we know that Mrs. Rockwell, in fact, was not particularly vulnerable in the sense that she was.
How long were these checks? How many checks were written on her account?
There were 17 checks, Your Honor.
17 checks, right? And that was over what period of time?
Over a period of several months.
Yeah, right. And I think you want to abandon that one too, counsel.
Your Honor, we won't abandon it, but perhaps we can turn to the first argument that we make in our brief, which has to do with the authentication feature.
That's a good idea.
Thank you. Your Honor, the definition of authentication feature in 1028D1 is unambiguous. And what it says is that an authentication feature is a hologram, watermark, symbol, etc., that is used by the issuing authority on an identification document to determine if the document is counterfeit, altered, or otherwise falsified. Now, this definition requires evidence of the actual use of the document by the issuing authority that issued the document. In this case, that would be the state of Maryland.
You know what I'm going to ask you now, right?
I have a feeling, Your Honor, you're going to ask about the record.
That's right.
Yes.
And that's not the argument that your office, I appreciate you're not still in that office, but you're representing that office, made to the district court. The argument that the defense counsel made to the district court, which is at JA-115, is that this enhancement is for people who separately possess a hologram, right? Separately, that is not on a driver's license. Perhaps it's a digital file or some type of hologram or watermark or sequence that they can put on, perhaps if they're making false identifications. And then again at page 11, it's a little hard to read the numbers on 118, again, defense counsel says, it seems clear that it's targeting or is for people who have that unique hologram or that unique watermark and that they possess that separately and that they are using these items to place them on identification documents or means of identification. That's not the argument you're making today, right?
Those are different and additional arguments in support of the same claim, Your Honor.
They're additional arguments, but not ones you're making today.
What those arguments are essentially ways of elaborating on the point that the district court confused a means of identification with an authentication feature. And we completely are making those arguments. We've made them in the briefs, and we continue to make them.
But the argument about using, that they're not using it, that's not actually here
Well, there are two arguments about using in this case. The one I think that is the clearest from our perspective is about the state of Maryland's use. And you're right, Your Honor, that was not specifically addressed in the hearing. We would argue that under In Re Sealed case, this court's precedent, that would not necessarily mean that de novo review would not apply.
But In Re Sealed case is specifically a case about sufficiency of the evidence based on the federal rule about sufficiency. And it is as they say in the opinion, it is an exception to the general rule that specific objection is required.
But I think that issue is addressed in the concurrence in Re Sealed case.
Yes.
But the main issue in the case, though, was a sort of circumstance in which a guideline was used and I believe an enhancement was imposed, and it was raised for the first time on appeal. And the question was cast in terms of sufficiency of the evidence, but it depended whether or not the specific factual finding at issue had to be made in the first place was a legal question, and Judge Brown explains this in her dissent. Nonetheless, despite the fact that it was a legal question, despite the fact that it hadn't been raised, the court examined it de novo, and we submit that the same approach should apply here. But, Your Honor, even if plain error were to apply on this argument, the text of the statute is clear. It's unambiguous. And this court, in a later In Re Sealed case that we also cite in our brief, has said that if you have plain text, that's enough to satisfy plain error. Here, the government had to show that the state of Maryland actually uses the IDs on its license for authentication purposes. They presented absolutely no evidence about the state of Maryland.
Why do you think they have them on the license?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Why do you think they have them on the license? They look pretty? Or?
Your Honor, I don't know why they have them on the license. I think.
Can you think of any other reason than authentication why there would be a hologram on the license?
Yes, Your Honor. I think.
What would that reason be?
It's possible. Your Honor, after the 9/11 attacks, as I'm sure you're aware, there was a great movement to develop.
Greater authentication.
Greater authentication.
Right. Driven they put holograms on.
Driven by the
right.
federal government. And the Real ID Act, this culminated in the Real ID Act, which essentially said if states do not have these types of features.
These authentication features.
Then these features like a hologram.
Yeah.
Then
features.
You can't use your ID at right. federal airports.
Right.
And so we don't
How
know.
How is that inconsistent with the question I first asked you
it's
as to what the purpose is for having it on there? The federal government made the decision, or the state government made the decision, the reason is still authentication, isn't it?
Your Honor, I would submit that it's possible that the state government was following the federal mandate and that the state government itself doesn't use these features for authentication purposes.
Okay.
As opposed to the TSA.
As opposed to the TSA. And in fact, Your Honor, the government has conceded that with regard to all of the features except for the hologram, there is another purpose, and that's, of course, to identify the person who's holding the document. Your Honor, if there's no further questions.
Yeah. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Your time is up. We'll give you back a couple of minutes for rebuttal if needed.
May it please the court, Jay Apperson for the United States. Your Honor, the district court did not plainly err in sua sponte sustaining appellant's objection to the sentencing guidelines on either of the adjustments, authentication feature of vulnerable victim, because the appellant never objected to those enhancements on the grounds now raised on appeal. Plain error is the appropriate.
Sua sponte. He didn't do it sua sponte. The court, there was a sentencing hearing, and the court heard both sides and then made rulings. That's not, why do you say the court ruled sua sponte?
Did not rule.
Oh, did not rule
sua sponte.
And not sua sponte, considering an issue that wasn't raised, is that
absolutely, Your Honor, for the reasons that you cited from the record. Their arguments now raised on appeal were simply not raised below. They raised entirely different arguments. With respect to the authentication feature, there was never a contest that the license contained authentication feature. A authentication feature was never a contest that the, I believe, five authentication features the district court found to be authentication features were in fact authentication features. The sole argument below on that was that they had to be possessed separately than that contained on the license, and the district court rejected that. But the claim that they're now raising was never raised below, and plain error is the appropriate the appropriate standard. Counsel argues that there was insufficient evidence. The pre-sentence report, Your Honor, upon which the district court was allowed to rely for any uncontested factual finding contained in the pre-sentence report, and the pre-sentence report is very clear. It contains on page 20 of the PSR, it specifically states, identifies each of these features and identifies them as, quote, authentication features. I'm not quoting from the PSR. The PSR is quoting the statutory language. Subsumed in that definition of authentication features is that the issuing authority uses these features for the purpose of identifying whether or not they're counterfeit. And there was never an objection to that. That is a factual finding contained in the pre-sentence report. That alone is sufficient evidence to support the district court's finding. And with respect, the issue is not very complicated. That's the end of the ball game on the authentication feature.
What do you think some of the features that the district court relied on are a little bit iffy here?
I don't, Your Honor, but of course we only need one.
I only know that you need one. I'm afraid you're going to try to rely on some of these other ones later, and maybe you're going to be sorry. I mean, I'm not sure why everything on a license is an I see why it's an identification feature. I don't really see why everything on the license is authentication.
Your Honor, I don't think the district court ever found that everything on the license, nor does the government argue that everything on a driver's license is constitutes an authentication feature. The question is whether it qualifies under the definition of authentication feature. Appellant is arguing that because they are identification features, means of identification, they can necessarily not
I
be
know,
authentication.
But when feature. You use the date of birth, for example, as an authentication feature, I think you would be in a lot of trouble if that's what you were coming up with.
I will concede that's probably the least clear one. The more clear ones are the ghost image. The driver's license contains a real digital photograph of the driver, and then a ghost image, which is more difficult to counterfeit. That's the very purpose of it. So there's no need to have two photographs to identify. A single photograph would do the identification and accomplish it very nicely. The purpose of the ghost photograph is to compare it against the digital. It's easy to put for counterfeiters to put a digital photograph on a it's more difficult for them to do it on the ghost. So if they accomplish one, a mere comparison of those two features on the driver's license will instantly identify the digital is a false one because it's more difficult to duplicate. The sequence of numbers, those are individual numbers. That was specifically addressed in the pre-sentence report. That was specifically addressed by the district court. It was that sequence of numbers which the bank teller wrote down after appellant used the driver's license and therefore used the hologram and all the other authentication features, including the unique identifying number, to put in the bank records.
You're talking about the license number, right?
I think that's correct, Your Honor.
So you think the license number itself is an authentication feature?
No, absolutely, because it qualifies under the definition of authentication
feature. Is it used as an authentication feature by the entity that produced the document?
It is, Your Honor, and that is a requirement for the term. We know that because the pre-sentence report used the term authentication feature in quotes in the pre-sentence report, identifying each of these features as authentication features.
Yeah, but the pre-sentence report seems to me just to be repeating the same statement that you are, or you're repeating that, whether it's correct or not, can't be discerned from the pre-sentence report.
Well,
it doesn't tell us how Maryland uses this information.
Actually, it doesn't even say this. I'm reading from the page you cited, and the probation office response is, the Maryland ID at issue had a unique identification number. That's not an authentication number, i.e. a sequence of numbers or letters. A number that was entered into the computer log by bank employees to verify the identity.
Yes, Your Honor.
But that's the identity of the defendant. And then it goes on and says, in addition, Maryland driver's license contained numerous additional security features that would qualify as authentication features. And then says, oh, I see, and the unique ID number. I'm sorry, I see that. So the probation officer does say that.
But Your Honor,
he says a hologram and a ghost image, doesn't tell us that it's used by that those features, unlike the others, are used by Maryland for authentication.
Well, Your Honor, by using the quote from the statute in the pre-sentence report, quote, authentication feature, close quote, it subsumes the definition.
How does that accomplish anything? The probation officer cannot take the place of knowledge, just by stating knowledge. You seem to be saying anything the probation officer says is true.
Any uncontested factual finding, that is, Your Honor.
That's a different argument than what I just understood you to be making. We were asking you, do we know that Maryland uses this for authentication? You said yes. We said, how do you know that? You said it's in the pre-sentence report, like it was scripture.
Your Honor,
now you're making a different argument, going back to where you started, that it's uncontested. Is that your argument, or is it your argument that this is otherwise established?
The answer is both, Your Honor. It was never contested that this was an authentication feature, and by being an authentication feature, they have necessarily not contested whether or not it is used by the issuing authority to check for fraud. It's just for example,
argument is it's uncontested, not that it's fact, but that it wasn't raised below, which is not the same thing, counsel. I mean, it may be enough.
It is,
but it's not the same thing. Both
is true. It is not contested, but it is a fact because the pre-sentence report uses that term of art in quotes, authentication.
That doesn't make it a fact. It may make it uncontested where it's been stated, therefore it hasn't been raised below, therefore different standards may apply. But you seem to be unwilling to let go of the second argument that it somehow makes it factual just because the pre-sentence report says it.
I am unwilling to let that go, Your Honor, because I think that is a factual finding contained in the pre-sentence report, and that uncontested factual finding is sufficient under PNEC to allow the district court judge to make his finding.
It may well be, and that may change the standard of review. But that doesn't support the proposition of your second ground for that argument.
Well, I've given you my best argument, Your Honor.
You went on to make another argument.
I don't see how you would say it's a question of fact. The sentence in question, if I've got it right, is that Maryland driver's license contained numerous additional security features that would qualify as, quote, authentication features, that's within the meaning of the statute. So this is an interpretation of the statute. It's not a question of fact.
That statement is an authentication feature.
It's a representation about the meaning of the statute.
The conclusion by the PSR that it is a, quote, authentication feature, close quote, is a statement of fact, a finding of fact contained in the pre-sentence report, and, of course, the district court made his own finding.
Why is authentication feature in quotation marks?
Yes, Your Honor. Because that's a term of art.
Exactly. And this is a statutory phrase, and we're being told that these features fall within this statutory phrase as opposed to another. And I can see that there could be factual findings underlying this, such as Maryland uses the information in a certain way. But absent that, it seems to be just a naked conclusion of law.
Well, Your Honor, for example, if I may, by analogy, this court sees a lot of enhancement for firearms, for example. And a given pre-sentence report, the PSR will assign the two-point enhancement for possession of a firearm. And that's if there's a contest, it's generally we object to the firearm enhancement.
Well, sometimes it's an objection that what I've got isn't a firearm.
Well, it may be, but to the extent that is the objection.
That's the nature of the objection here.
With respect, it's not the nature of the objection here, Your Honor. The
analogy. You haven't shown that what it is an authentication device.
They never contested that it was an authentication.
You're back to the first argument.
That's a different argument.
Well, if you're not buying my second, I'll rely on my first, Your Honor. It was not contested. The standard is plain error. They cannot meet the standard of plain error. It was never contested below that these were authentication devices. And common sense tells us that they are. The court was absolutely correct to be able to rely on that. On common sense, as a hologram, the only purpose of it is to authenticate the document, to make it more difficult to counterfeit.
But the argument refined here, perhaps more than it ever has been before, is that the has to be used for authentication by the issuer.
Correct.
Now, the argument now has transmogrified, I guess, into an argument that it hasn't been established that that's who's using it as an authentication device, as opposed to the TSA.
Well,
if this was put on there in response to the federal government's mandate, which probably was, it may be that Maryland isn't using it as an authentication device. Only bartenders and TSA.
I think reasonably understood, the issuing authorities are using these for counterfeit purposes. We have cited a Florida case where that's exactly what the issuing authorities do.
So we don't know about Maryland.
There's no fact, because it was not contested, there was not a factual record, they never raised that point, and so there was no specific findings by the district court, because it was never asked to do that. There was never a contest that these were authentication devices, and subsumed in that was never a contest that the issuing authority didn't look at these features for the purpose of determining whether it was counterfeit or not. And I think the record is clear on that. On plain error standard, they simply cannot prevail. For the reasons advanced, unless the court would like me to address the vulnerable victim enhancement.
I don't care to hear you on that unless my colleagues do.
Please no.
Please no. Okay. Right. Thank you.
Well, with that, I thank the court, and we urge that the district court's decision be affirmed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We'll give the appellant back 2 minutes for rebuttal, if you wish. You're not required.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I think the government has helpfully framed the case. This essentially turns on how you read the pre-sentence report and what the statements in that report say and whether they were contested. Your Honor, the pre-sentence report does not address, of course, how the state of Maryland uses these particular features. The government's incorrect when it said initially in its argument that there was something in this report that said that it was used for authentication purposes. And I think we can see that the government itself, at least at one point, recognized that. If you compare the probation office's response to Ms. Baker's objections to the PSR, which are on page 20, to the government's sentencing memo that was submitted to the district court, which is on page 87 of the appendix, you'll see that the probation office's response is copied almost verbatim. But there's one little difference. And the government, when it was writing a sentencing memo, added the phrase that the driver's license had a unique identification number that was assigned by the issuing state to establish its authenticity. In other words, when the government was writing its memo, it appears to have known that the pre-sentence report on its own was insufficient to provide the necessary facts. So, Your Honor, as Judge Ginsburg suggested, the statement that this qualifies as an authentication feature in the PSR is a naked conclusion of law. There's no evidence to support it. Even if it were, and moreover, Your Honor, I think we did, to whatever extent this claim was made in the pre-sentence report, we objected to it. We did so in our objection to the original PSR, and then we did so in our sentencing memorandum on page 97, where we said that her crime did not involve the use of any of these authentication features and did not involve any feature that is used by we didn't say state of Maryland, but we were talking about the statutory language, is used to determine whether the enhancement is counterfeit. In any event, Your Honor, we would win on plain error review because this is a clear statute.
Your time is up, counsel. We thank you. I take it, although we don't have the rating sheet this morning, that you're, I know you don't like for courts to surmise things, but I surmise that you're here in a pro bono.
I am, Your Honor.
Therefore, on behalf of the court and the system, thank you for your service to the courts in the United States.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.